Hello and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs. I am joined with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And in this episode, we actually want to talk a little bit about insulin. So there were two recent publications that we think are pretty interesting on drugs that we don't currently have. And the first one is actually on concentrated insulin. So it's U500, but not the U500 that we're all familiar with, which really lasts pretty long in the body and kind of acts more like an intermediate acting insulin. It just lasts way too long. But this newer insulin formula acts more like a rapid acting or even faster than a rapid acting. So, Natalie, I'm going to turn it to you to talk about this.
Thanks, Diana. Hi, everyone. So the article is titled A New Highly Concentrated Insulin Aspart, AT278, 500 units per ml, demonstrates ultra-rapid pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic properties in type 2 diabetes, regardless of BMI. So already I'm like, let's dive in, right? This is a drug we've been waiting for these people with type 2. So what this study did was it evaluated the pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics and safety of this novel insulin formulation. They compared it with standard concentration insulin aspart, as well as U500 regular human insulin that we use now. So those were the three comparators, right? The concentrated U100 that we use all the time, and then U500. So this was just a single center, but it was randomized double-blind crossover 12-hour euglycemic clamp study. Why do we do that? Because we need to know when does the insulin come in and go out, and this is how we do it. We use people with type using people with type 2 diabetes. Ready for this? BMI as low as 25, BMI as high as 38, and they wanted that variety because we typically think of U500 only for certain patients, right? People that take very high doses of insulin and tend to have obesity that goes along with that as a co-diagnosis. So super interesting. They got a single subcutaneous dose of one of those three formulations. And so here we go. What are the results, right? AT278U500 exhibited a significantly faster insulin absorption than either U insulin aspart U100, so faster than the regular fast acting, and of course U500 that we know is we I call it ultra slow. Right? But it's not really, but that's we jokingly say that. So, leading to a significantly higher glucose lowering effect within the first hour compared to both insulin U100 aspart and U and Humulin regular U500. So, and it does it across BMI. For lower BMI, for higher BMI, it was consistent in that. So, which we like. So what is the conclusion in this first study that's been published about this? It maintains its ultra rapid acting onset characteristics independent of BMI, which is really a big deal. The first which represents then the first ultra rapid option for prandial dosing in insulin resistant people with type 2 diabetes requiring high dose therapy. So I'm super excited about this because we really aren't supposed to be using U500 in AID systems. Diana, where are you on this one?
So I am very excited. I did not know this was a thing being studied. And I think this would be very helpful to several of my patients. I mean, right now, what we're doing is we are putting the U200 in the insulin pumps. And that is okay, but that's doubling our amount, right? So it's taking us from 200 to 400, or sometimes 180 to 360, depending on the pump. And some people need hundreds and hundreds of units. And so what's happening is I am having them use U500 in either pumps and manual, or we're trying to use automation. And it's very risky with the hypoglycemia risk because the way the Humulin U500 works is just like it is such a difficult insulin. It is so difficult. And even so the people that are on it that are not on pumps, you know, we switch people to it because they're just like going through so much insulin and it's not, you know, it's like difficult injecting that kind of volume under their skin. And It's so tough because we're dosing it like 3 times a day. We're instructing them that they have to take it 30 minutes before meals. And then if they don't eat, it's like, well, what do? You're supposed to take it with food, but then it's also serving as your basal. It is just so, like, it's really the worst insulin to work with. We only use it because we have to. So if there was this ultra rapid acting, and it's so impressive that it, I mean, this is a small study, right? But like, it was even faster than the U100 aspart. I think that would be terrific.
Yeah, I can think of not just a few, but a lot of patients that would really love this. And if you think about it, people really tend to go to be attracted to smaller volume insulin pumps because they're smaller, right? So you think of like Omnipod that holds 200. You think of iLet that holds 180. You think of Mobi, Tandem's Mobi that holds 200. For a lot of people, as soon as they sit at the table, you're like, well, this can't happen because you're on 300 or 400 units a day. And this isn't unheard of. So we do the best we can with what we have, but it's never been great, right? This would allow people with and people with just high insulin needs to be able to use a pump, pick the pump that they want, and get that insulin volume to a point where you don't end up with these huge depots under your skin and having it act funny or not absorb appropriately or have all kinds of crazy things that happen because you're putting such a volume in one place.
Yeah, as I'm thinking about this more, you know, I don't think it's just for the people on really high doses of insulin, because we have one pump right now that's already a 7 day, you know, has the 7 day infusion set. You can wear it for up to 7 days. We know we have others that are coming. I mean, that makes sense. It'd be a goal of every pump. Like, why would you want to change it 2 to 3 days if you could go 7 days? But that
people run out, right? Exactly.
200 or 300 units isn't going to make it 7 days for most people. So that would be really nice if it could hold 5 times as much insulin and you could actually wear it for a whole week and not have to change it. So I think that would be really great. The question will be, like, what would the pump companies do? Are they going to continue, like, just keeping it off label, or are they going to try to see if they could get their pumps approved to actually use this type of insulin and get it through the FDA? Because the advantage of that is, you know, improved safety. They could talk about it if they get an FDA indication. People feel more confident that they're following what they're supposed to be doing. So there'd be a lot of advantages if, you know, we could get it approved and get it for something like that.
Right. Absolutely. So if you have a 300 unit capacity pump and you're trying to make it last 7 days and you use U100, you get 42 units a day, which is not a very big dose. If you use the U200, you would double that, right? So you could get 84 units a day, which is larger, but even for someone who takes a higher dose of insulin, that isn't enough. So you're right. They do run out before that 7 day period happens. So if we had access to U500 with a 7 day infusion set, wow, people, almost everyone that I've treated recently, that we could make that work. Right. So I love the idea of that. I really do. This is really exciting. I was not aware that this was happening in the background. And usually you and I kind of know what studies are going on. And all of a sudden this comes out like, what happens here?
Yeah. I mean, it is an early study.
It's a small study. So it's going to be a while. This isn't coming next year. We do not expect this in 2027, you guys. But it is hopeful, because with insulin cost in the United States, right? Insulin has become a commodity. And so Medicare covers it, $35 a month, for example, right? So having companies that are still interested in bringing out new insulins and new formulations, including the two new once weekly basal insulins, this is exciting. And I'm very hopeful. Hopefully we'll see more like in the coming year, like at the scientific meetings, whether that's ACE or Endo or ADA, I am sure there's going to be more data.
Right. Yeah. I would love to see it. I also would love if this came in cartridges and could just like slip into a pump and then there'd be a barcode. You'd know it was U500. So the pump would like correspond and be super safe. Like, that's what we need. So I hope the companies are listening and then they do that. Anyway, speaking of new insulins and concentrated insulins, right? So we'll switch gears a little bit. There was actually a recent study on IcoSema. So that is insulin icodec, which is that new A-weekly insulin, right? It's the weekly insulin called A-weekly that we had talked about before that's now actually in pharmacies. And it's also a concentrated insulin. It is a U700 formulation because you're giving seven times the dose at one time and you're only taking it once a week. So that kind of makes sense. So this has actually been studied in a few different trials with this joint formulation of icodec with semaglutide. And this isn't the first time we've heard about this joint collaboration with an insulin and a GLP-1. We have Soliqua, which is glargine and lixisenatide. And then we also have Xultophy, which is degludec with liraglutide. So we've had these before, but we've never really had one. We've never had a weekly insulin and we've never had a weekly GLP-1 with it. So let's talk a little bit about what this study said. So this was called Combine 4. And this was a 40-week randomized open label treat to target phase three study. It was done in adults with type 2 diabetes. They had to have an A1C over 8%. And they were randomized to get this IcoSema combination or just once a day glargine U100. And they were actually titrated, both groups were titrated to get to a fasting glucose between 70 to 90. And the primary endpoint was the change in A1C, but then they also looked at body weight as well. So in total, there were 243 people taking IcoSema, 242 taking glargine. And of those participants, A1C decreased from 9.57 in the IcoSema group to by 3.32 percentage points. And in the glargine group, it went from, they started with 9.5 and they decreased by 2.44 percentage points. So they were both like ultimately in the sixes. Well, actually, the glargine was a tiny bit over. So the difference between the groups was 0.88%. So definitely favoring the IcoSema in terms of that A1C reduction. And then the other thing was body weight decreased in the IcoSema group. So despite the addition of insulin as well, it decreased by 0.79 kilograms. The glargine only group increased by 3.81 kilograms. So there was actually a 4.61 kilogram difference favoring the IcoSema. And then one other thing I want to shout out, which I'm so happy to see, is they did use CGM and they looked at time in range, which I think any drug study should look at this, but especially if you're on insulin. We want to see this, right? So the IcoSema group was 79.8% in range. The glargine U100 group was 64.5% in range. So, Natalie, what do you think?
Well, let's start backwards. The time in range, remember everyone, 5% increase in time in range reduces complications. So right there alone, this gives you hope, doesn't it? So that's number one right there. Number two, this makes sense, right? So when you take semaglutide, it slows down digestion, it tells the pancreas to make insulin as that glucose rises, and it is using the body's endogenous insulin. So it's more efficient, and we don't have that post-meal spiking that we do on glargine alone for a lot of people, right? Or we have to over basalize them to get this to work. And then they have lows and then they gain weight or they start to feel hungry as their glucoses drop. This makes sense. We're doing it now, but we're doing it in pieces, aren't we? We're giving a once a week semaglutide and then daily basal. Why wouldn't we combine it to the once a week basal? We've got weight reduction, which we almost, I mean, it's barely weight reduction. We could even call it weight neutral, but the other group had weight gain, you know? So that alone is a second thing that I would use it. Like, this is really impressive data. And so we need more of it, of course, right? But when we start with 653individuals, this is a pretty good size group to start with. I'm impressed with the data. I am.
Yeah, and there was actually some other IgoSema studies that have been done as well. So this particular one, this is the combined four. So the efficacy and safety of IgoSema versus different comparators was also studied in combine one to three. And in combine one and three, so that enrolled insulin-experienced individuals. And in those studies, the IgoSema showed superior, or at least being non-inferior in terms of reductions in A1C and superior body weight reductions compared with either Icodec or a daily basal bolus insulin therapy. And actually, hypoglycemia was statistically significantly lower with IgoSema versus comparator. And then in combined two, that enrolled also insulin naive people. They were already on a GLP-1 receptor agonist, and IgoSema showed a superior reduction in A1C compared with just being on semaglutide 1.0 milligrams. And so I think there's a lot of what we're seeing from this is there's a lot of potential use cases for this. This adds to that body of evidence. I think certainly in terms of titrating and just doing it together, it's kind of in a lot of ways easier. If you're thinking from like a drug standpoint, at least in the US system, you end up with one copay instead of two copays. And that's been one of probably the biggest selling points of drugs like Soliqua and Xultophy is like it's $35 because it's considered part of their insulin. So those would be huge selling points. Now, I think on the flip side, what we have to remember is whenever you have a pre-mixed formulation, you are limited by both drugs, right? And in this case, we are limited by the insulin because usually it's going to be the insulin. Like you can't take more, you're going to have hypoglycemia, right? So in this study, on average, they got up to 0.66 milligrams of semaglutide. So now they're like, what do you think of that dose?
Right. So I mean, if we take it separately, we can have 1 milligram and 2 milligrams, right? So it's not at the maximum, but maybe a little bit of insulin. Maybe that's why they didn't lose as much weight. Maybe there's a lot of maybes in there, right? But I think that for the right person who needs a $35 copay, who doesn't have access to a weekly GLP-1, for someone who it's just one thing. So if we wanted to give, an elderly person, you go in once a week, you give that medication and you keep it so that there's no misdosing, there's no extra additional dosing. Did I forget? Did I not? I see a lot of people under mental health challenges, right? We give it once a week and it's done. And you don't have to think about the burden of, did I take this? Did I not take this? How do I travel? It's once a week and we're done. I'll take 0.66 over zero every
Yeah.
time, right? So will I get as much weight loss with that as if I could max out that GLP-1? No, but I also can titrate up more slowly, which we really like about the semaglutide pen now, right? So all of these things give me the no, I have a lot of people that I could use this with and use it safely. The goal would be to get that cardiovascular risk reduction in the semaglutide dose combined with glucoses that are in range, more in range than we were getting with one or the other. I'm okay with it. I wish I could get to 1 milligram, but they didn't need it. What a wonderful thing that they didn't need it and they were at goal.
Right. And some people probably did. Some people are less, some people are more. You're just going to be limited by whatever that insulin dose is. But that is a really good point. I mean, generally, we are titrating insulin more slowly. And so that allows the GLP to be titrated more slowly. So, in theory, maybe that would help tolerability a little bit. On the flip side, there could be some people that can't tolerate a higher dose of the GLP. And then this would limit their ability to take more insulin. So I guess that's one of the drawbacks of having it combined. But it's kind of interesting because we joke about, well, GLP should just be everywhere, right? Like it should be in the water. Everyone should have GLP, right? So like, why not combine it with insulin? Like maybe we shouldn't be taking insulin without GLP. Maybe no one should.
I think if you follow the ADA guidelines, you do, obviously, if you start someone with DKA or you start someone with a very high A1C that has the polyuria, polydipsia, we are supposed to be using insulin there. Okay, let's add a GLP-1. And what we do is we bring down the insulin dose as we bring up a GLP-1, as we add an SGLT2 inhibitor, those kinds of things, right? This might make it easier because we could just say, okay, let's bring you back up, let's see where you are. And again, once weekly reduces burden. So, You know, I think what we're going to have to do is put this in our bag and pull it out when we think it's appropriate for all the different reasons we've talked about. I can see it. I can also see someone say, no, no, my number one goal is weight loss. I want to maximize my once weekly experience on GLP-1. Fine, we'll do that. And we can, you could still take a weekly, right? Like the insulin Icodec and this other injection right next to it and get that maximum dose instead of combining. I just know that it might increase adherence if they're all in one thing.
Right. So it'll be interesting ultimately if this comes to market or not. So, you know, I've heard rumblings that Novo may choose not to bring it to the US market. And it kind of reminds me of, I think it was a drug called Ryzodeg. It was degludec with aspart. It was a pre-mixed formulation. It was one I was actually really excited about because I just thought, gosh, if someone could get their fast acting with even one meal a day consistently, that would be good. But it ultimately never was brought to the US market. So anyway, it'll be interesting. I'd be curious what our viewers and listeners think. Is this something you would want in the US market? Do you think we don't need it? I'd be curious to hear people's thoughts on it.
Another great episode and a really good discussion around, you know, insulin in general. I'm excited that we have options and new options coming all the time.
Definitely. So with that, we thank you all for tuning in. That concludes this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.
Thanks, everyone.